You're listening to Emancipart, where we free ourselves up to talk back to art. I'm your host, Ellen Berkovich. It's Thursday, April 28th, and we're in San Francisco for the press preview of the new SF MoMA, which opened to the public on May 14th. The expansion cost $305 million. Today, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art has 170,000 square feet of gallery space. For SF MoMA, the architecture firm Snohetta and one of its founders, lead architect Craig Dykers, designed the new building. The building is blonde and white, with beautiful staircases of maple. Incidentally, staircases from Aspen Art Museum to here are a prominent feature of new museums. In 2009, Doris and Donald Fisher pledged a gift of their work, and so in the inaugural shows, SF MoMA is exhibiting 260 works on a technicality called a 100-year loan. 260 art objects for the rest of us is a little less than a fourth of the art the Fishers bought from 1976 onwards. Doris Fisher told the Wall Street Journal they had a bit of cash in their pocket that year because their company, The Gap, had gone public. Meantime, look who's here in a gallery of Anselm Kiefer paintings. New York journalist, correspondent for the art newspaper, international film critic, David Darcy.
You may not know this, but Anselm Kiefer, and this is in a conversation with me in Israel, in the bowels of the new addition to the Tel Aviv Museum, said that he fundamentally saw himself as a humorist. That will tell you something about German humor.
When was this conversation?
This conversation was in at the opening of that wing in the fall of 2013. I had just come back from the Persian Gulf for this event, and it's a fantastic edition by Scott Preston Cohen of Harvard, much underexposed and underpraised. What I like about this is that you get the combination of the scorched earth, the Europe that has been raked with a hot rake of extermination, and then which is a kind of a constant in his visual vocabulary and in his narrative, but you also have what's come up after that, and that is something that people can speculate on. For me, people, when these pictures came out, everyone was saying, oh, they're so beautiful. They're just so wonderful. And talk about the lyricism of all these things. That's not what I see in them. I see this matted vegetation that looks like people have gleaned their way through it even after it's come up from scorched earth. You know, if you want to draw moral from it, which everyone does, that's why Kiefer's so popular, I think. It's that, you're still living with the consequences of what gave you scorched earth in the first place.
I caught up with curator Sandra Phillips at the opening of the new Pritzker Center for Photography.
So we were given a collection of Japanese contemporary and some historical photography, mainly starting with the people of the Provoke era, maybe a little surrealism, but essentially of the 60s and 70s to the present, by a young man who is actually a Buddhist priest. His name is Akiyoshi Taniguchi. Studied photography at NYU himself and became just devoted to and very interested in helping younger photographers in Japan. It was in his temple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
and because of what happened to Japan with the earthquake and tsunami, he felt that it needed to be in a safer place and with a community that really knew something about Japanese photography. And we've been working with Japan, and we've done several shows of Japanese photography. So it made sense to him. And we will be giving it a major exhibition. It opens in October.
After going to the opening of the Whitney last year, one has to notice that new museums strive to make the experience more comfortable for the visitor. In San Francisco, one of the ways this is happening is via a so-called living wall.
My name is Serene Buckley. I work with Habitat Horticulture. David Brenner, he is the designer behind the living wall. It is the largest living wall in the United States, and it actually comes with a specific design intent. So it's not simply a piece to complement the architecture, but it actually has a narrative that really tells the story of the Bay Area.
My name's David Brenner, and I am the principal and lead designer at Habitat Horticulture.
And what's the ecological purpose of the living wall? What's it doing in this context?
More than the ecological purpose, it's more of a psychological purpose. As you know, you're inundated with a lot of amazing art pieces. After a certain time, you really need a place to recharge and see something that feels natural. About 40% of the wall is native to California. So here we have a maidenhair fern that is, you know, you could find up on Mount Tam. Lots of different species. They're not all native. We've got some geranium that, you know, has a really bright citrusy scent.
When did you have to plant this so that it looks the way that it does today?
I think we finished in September, but it is definitely growing right now and filling in every day, you know, with the spring and the warmer temperatures.
In 1999, the Fishers, the Schwabs, and Mimi and Peter Haas got together to purchase 19 Ellsworth Kellys directly from the artist, who at the time also gave three of his early paintings to the museum. And you can see the impact of this acquisition and gift in this inaugural exhibition, including in this spectacular gallery called Ellsworth Kellys Multi-Panel Paintings.
My name is Meredith Van Dyke, and I'm a curatorial assistant in the Painting and Sculpture Department at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art.
So tell me a little bit, there's this really large concentration of works by Ellsworth Kelly. How did that come to be?
So we are really lucky to be able to showcase the Fisher Collection here. Deep collection of Ellsworth Kelly works. And then on top of that, the museum benefited from a Mellon grant, which allowed us to really study his works in depth. One kind of fortuitous coincidence is that our gallery wall heights are the same heights that Ellsworth's studio was. So while he was painting a lot of these, especially more recent works, he was kind of already envisioning them in the space.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see it with it's a 1996 piece with a piece from 30 years earlier, right?
Right, and that piece is so interesting because it plays with this notion of, you know, a painting being on the wall or on the floor, and this one does both.
Yeah, exactly. And this could have been upstairs with Carl Andre, right?
Right, but we don't want to confuse people. You can't walk on this.
Well, we've just been talking about the concentration of Richters and the inevitable competition between a museum like SF MoMA and MoMA. What's been, you know, what's going on? Do museums need to diversify more in what they're showing?
David Darcy.
No, I don't think there's any competition between SF MoMA and the Museum of Modern Art in New York. As much as we're sitting here looking at what money can do, which is build a huge building right in the center of downtown San Francisco with a prominent firm, with a collection that a family put, you know, decades into putting together, you know, you are not going to compete with the Museum of Modern Art. The only way you're going to compete with the Museum of Modern Art here is that there's a picture, Matisse's picture of Madame Matisse with that elaborate hat, cannot travel, or at least hasn't been able to travel, and MoMA will never, ever get that on loan. So if people want to do the absolute complete Matisse, they have to come to the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. But let me say another thing, that I find it kind of odd when MoMA has such a reverential attitude and a gallery devoted to Anselm Kiefer. And I think, I think Kiefer's interesting. I'm not in love with his work, but it's a memory. It evokes the memory of some of the worst tragedies. And here's a place that fought so hard not to return a work of art, Portrait of Valli, which was on loan at Egon Schiele's 1912 portrait of his girlfriend and mistress, and MoMA, which claimed that they had no position on the ownership of the picture, paid a very expensive lawyer to write a long memorandum saying that the family that had owned the picture had no legal right in any jurisdiction anywhere in the world to recover the picture. I guess if that's no position on the ownership of that painting, then Picasso wasn't bald.
I must confess that I find a lot of the new SF MoMA, the architecture and the emphasis on the trophy art, to be off-putting in a city where the headlines include the crisis of homelessness and the effects of new wealth that has resulted, according to one website, in an absolutely unprecedented number of no-fault evictions. In other words, the tenant didn't do anything except for not making enough money. So here in this city, in the year 2016, the new museum operates as a true canonization of modernism, at least in its first appearance. It operates as a place where there will be very grand parties, where probably the former Mario Botta building, which has been reduced truly to more or less the status of a dance floor, might be used for just that. If you can get young members of the city to come, they'll be plugged into their phone and pocket devices, listening to roller derby players and members of the San Francisco Giants opining on the art. You've been listening to A Man's Apart, where we free ourselves up to talk back to art and movies. I'm your host, Ellen Berkovich. Sign up on our mailing list. We'll be back next month.